Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Chris Hutting. Let's get into the first news story today, and the continuing bad news for service delivery in Joburg just keeps coming. It's, of course, the country's biggest city, and in many ways, its financial and economic heart, and yet the city is suffering a big number of service delivery problems. Just two stories, which are kind of an example that I think represents the larger decay. A ward councillor in Randburg talked to News 24 about some of the problems with the fire station in her ward. Recently, there had been two relatively small fires at substations, so aging electrical infrastructure catching fire. And during those fires, no one was able to get hold of the local fire station because apparently they did not have any phones. In fact, the councillor has asked members of the public to phone her so that she can do her best to get in touch with the fire station managers and chiefs. At one of the fires, the fire station did not know of the fire until a local security company actually sent someone to physically go and tell them what was happening, which is obviously not great. The DA spokesperson on public safety, Michael Sun, said that the city's regions, I think there's about seven regions or eight regions, I can't remember exactly, each one only usually has about one or two functioning fire engines per day. This makes something like that horrible, these horrible fire disasters we've had recently where a number of people have been killed, particularly in inner city Johannesburg, now makes a lot more sense as to why so many people died. It's not just the fires were bad. It's that the fire services just aren't in a great condition to respond. At the same time, a big chunk of western Johannesburg, stretching from Johannesburg South, Soweto, Roodepoort, and parts of Randburg, have been without water for all of today, as the Randwater Eichenhof pumping station's electrical supply box had some kind of fault, needed to be cleaned out and repaired. Now, they are promising that the water will come back this evening, but this is still obviously not a great state of affairs, and it follows a trend of almost continuous water outages. I think every single week, at least, there has been a major water outage in the city of Johannesburg this year. I think we can safely say that some kind of unplanned water shedding is now officially hitting Johannesburg. And despite the claims that this is due to some sort of high usage, it is very much not the case. The city's infrastructure from the Rand Water side and also from the city side seems like it's in a very perilous state. So, Chris, what can we make of this? Obviously, this is, you know, not a great performance from the kind of political chaos we've had in the Joburg Council over the last couple of years, but particularly not a good sign for the ANC, PA, AIC, EFF coalition.
Nick, yes, I think, was it end of last year or early this year, the minister or the Department of Water and Sanitation at least indicated the possibility of water shedding. They might have used different, more diplomatic or less loaded terminology, but to that effect, given backlogs in maintenance, lack of available funding for that infrastructure, building new infrastructure, maintaining infrastructure like water treatment plants, pumping stations, also negatively impacted by ongoing load shedding. And when load shedding is more intense, there's more strain on that equipment. The signs have been there for a while that this sort of thing was coming down the line, and now it just seems to, it might then accelerate at a very sharp pace. We'll need to see what sort of mitigating factors can be implemented, but particularly the fire, I think, indicates that lack of routine maintenance and maybe oversight, those basic things that you take for granted that then when they aren't done, they accelerate into damage and things that run into the millions, but then also impact people's daily lives when they can't have access to water and the like, which is the reality for many South Africans in more semi-urban rural areas, but is now possibly going to start being seen in metros like Johannesburg, which you wouldn't have thought maybe 5 years ago, or even longer before that. So the point around the security company that went to the fire station, I think, is one that could also become more regular occurrence. And it shows the importance for for individuals, people in homes, complexes, businesses, civil society organizations to work with and partner with entities like security companies to have plans in place, mitigating factors, or how are you going to deal with this? It's one thing to have load shedding, to try and install solar panels and rechargeable light bulbs, but when your water goes, it's a whole different matter altogether. So don't be caught off guard by this kind of thing. I think the signs are very clear at this point in time.
And perhaps selfishly, both of these stories are actually affecting me right now. I live in the ward in which the fire station has no way to contact them. And actually, one of the security companies, or may even be a number of the security companies in my area, actually offer a private fire station service as part of signing up with them. And on top of that, I'm also affected by the water outage. So let's just say that it's a very good thing that this podcast is audio and visual only, that you can't smell me right now. Because no water, as you say, has a rather unpleasant effect on a person's life. Anyway, obviously, this is of great importance to the whole country, because even if you don't live in Joburg, Joburg really is in many ways the beating heart of the country. And if it continues to suffer like this, the country as a whole, its economy, its tax collection, all these kind of things is going to suffer as well. Okay, let's move on to our next topic. And this is, I think, one that is in quite a lot of ways related to the first one. And that is that we finally have our gross domestic product, our GDP numbers for 2023, and we get an idea of how much the economy grew last year. So in the fourth quarter of 2023, GDP increased by 0.1%. So about just above being flat. So in other words, almost no economic growth. Transport, storage, and communication saw the most growth with 2.9% in the fourth quarter. And there's also some growth in the mining and quarrying industry, as well as in business and real estate. Catering accommodation decreased by 2.9%, and there was also a drop in agriculture, forestry, and fishing. This has given us our total growth rate for the year, and in 2023, the South African economy grew about 0.6%, which is very far off the sort of 5, 6, 7% that South Africa's economy will need to grow at if it wants to have any hope of fixing our major socioeconomic problems, such as unemployment, in any short period of time. Industries leading the way, more kind of developed financial services, personal services, things like that, leading the way in the little bit of growth we did have, while things like agriculture, mining recording negative growth in 2023 as a whole. Chris, what do you make of these numbers? Obviously, this is not what the government wants to see just before an election.
Absolutely not, but I think it is expected given the various constraints that act almost as a hard cap or a ceiling on South Africa's growth potential, the electricity, the logistics issues, rigid labor markets, things like preferential procurement that divert so much of even state spending to wasteful and corrupt ends, with middlemen across the board sort of using those funds for other ends. And you're not seeing that notable investment in new infrastructure. So at the moment, a lot of spending in South Africa, it's easy to get lost in sort of GDP numbers. And even if we had between 3 and 5%, we would need to ask, where is that investment and spending happening? So at the moment, it's happening in things like renewable energy, trying to state-proof yourself in things like electricity, water, as we mentioned in our first story. It's those infrastructure investments that are almost in a way wasteful because they're not new infrastructure. They're not roads, bridges, mines, things that add to a more productive economy that can help get beneficiation, manufacturing, all those sorts of value-added products and services going to a substantial enough degree to make a change in South Africa's unemployment rate, which continues to hover on the expanded definition around above 40%. So for while this continues, National Treasury projecting over the next 3 years, averaging 1.6% economic growth, that adds to the pressure, I think, on the current government, but on future governments as well, really in terms of their ideas, their policies that they pursue. Can they make a change in that regard or not? I do think the fact that there even was 0.6% growth last year, and I know it's trite to say, points to that ability of many South African businesses and citizens to adapt to the current climate and try and still maintain some measure of economic activity. It's not what it should be. They shouldn't have to pay taxes and also on top of that then pay for private electricity, water, security, schooling, all that sort of stuff. It's extra taxes on top of that. But they're building in those systems now, which over the medium to long term can then put themselves in a much better and stronger position and for the country as well. It just depends how we can integrate those things and get them going as well as possible, even despite punitive and negative government policy.
All right, so let's move on to our last story. And President Ramaphosa has praised the passing of the draft legislation to reform the public services, South Africa's public services. There, we won't go into all the details of the bill, but we will just discuss one pretty quickly, which I think is a pretty good change. This is that you will, if you are head of department or you are an employee in government directly reporting to a head of department, you will be prohibited by this legislation from holding political office. The president said that this was part of an effort to separate party and state. Now, that's very good. I think that that should be applauded. I think it should also go further, but you know, it's the right direction. However, at the very same time that the government is sort of moving towards passing legislation like this, it's also defending its right to place political appointees in positions all over the state and society through its policy of cadre deployment. So something kind of has to give here, and considering the track record of President Ramaphosa so far, I suspect that cadre deployment will win out as the more important than adherence to the public services, the new Public Service Act. Chris, what do you make of this?
No, I agree with that. I mean, especially, and we'll reiterate this at many points and many topics this year, but in the context of elections, interest groups vying for a slice of the pie, interest groups is part of the governing alliance that the ANC is part of, a wider alliance. Those things need to be taken into consideration, pleasing interest groups and powerful individuals with strong support bases. So at the end of the day, you've got a policy proposal that sounds pragmatic and rational, and kudos for that having been formulated, but it might run up against sort of the very hard wall of ideology where the party still wants to maintain that level of influence and control. It sees it as the right thing for the party to do. It's rational within the purview of the National Democratic Revolution, sort of guiding light of the ANC. So you wonder whether this will actually be implemented, whether it will be amended in some ways, might be scrapped even at some point. So the signs, some of the signals are good, but as always, let's see what the final form actually looks like.
Right. And of course, you know, it's one thing to pass a piece of legislation. It's another thing to strictly adhere to it. The Municipal Financial Management Act was created to try and rein in corruption by placing lots of onerous restrictions on the spending of money across municipalities in the country. However, as it turned out, corrupt people just tended to ignore the regulations completely. So yes, you could find that people were in violation of them, but it didn't really make a difference because no one was getting prosecuted. And so I think in many ways, you know, the implementation of a policy like this is really where the rubber hits the road. Okay, if you are interested in the stories we talk about on the Daily Friend and you want to become involved in South Africa's political process to make some kind of difference, please remember that you can go to pledgetovote.co.za, sign up there, and pledge to vote in South Africa's upcoming elections. You know, this is your chance to make your voice heard, to impact the political process in the way that you care about, that you want it to be changed, and that will put you on a mailing list, which will help you to get to the polls on time, to know where, how to find all the information about voting, and make sure that you don't miss the day. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. We hope you found that interesting. That's a wrap.